You're listening to Audio Journal. Up next are articles and stories from Reader's Digest. This program is funded in part by the Memorial Foundation for the Blind and the Massachusetts Commission for the Blind. My name is Holly Miller, and I'm your volunteer reader. I was a volunteer for Audio Journal when I lived in Massachusetts. I've since moved back to my home state of Texas, but I'm thrilled that I can continue volunteering for Audio Journal by recording this program remotely. I'll begin my program today with Just for Fun. Been to a destination wedding? What about a destination divorce party? Buddy moons, funeral cruises. These days, vacations aren't exclusively for relaxing. They can also be an event. By Joey Green. Before her destination wedding in Seville, Spain, my cousin Sharon, an American, ordered 6 ramos, or bouquets, for her bridesmaids. The local florist, hearing ramos, delivered 6 wooden oars tied with ribbon. Half the memories of destination weddings are the disasters they spawn. Take the Tuscany destination wedding, where the bride-to-be shared on Reddit that she had offered to help a struggling relative with airfare. It was a nice gesture, but unfortunately, word spread, and soon a dozen family members and their plus ones also expected the couple to pay for their travel. And that's when the lovebirds decided to elope. These days, destination celebrations aren't limited to nuptials. A recent AAA survey found that 76% of Americans planning trips in 2026 say they'll base them on life milestones, like graduations and anniversaries. With that in mind, you might consider these destination celebrations for some of life's equally passport-worthy occasions. Destination divorce party. When Allison of Memphis, Tennessee, finalized her divorce at age 40, her friends didn't send flowers. Instead, they handed her round-trip airline tickets to Miami. "We called it my single moon," she wrote on Reddit. The 6 women arrived at their hotel, where the staff greeted Allison with a Just Divorced tiara and sash. They toasted with alimony teenies and shot glasses printed with the slogan, "Take a shot, I just untied the knot." It felt silly at first, but then like a fresh start, Allison says, especially when the concierge handed me a cupcake with a ball and chain on it and we went clubbing until 2 a.m. Sure enough, Evite data shows that divorce party invitations have soared to a record high. Some hotels advertise divorce party packages with spa treatments and breaking up playlists, including songs like "I Will Survive," "Since You've Been Gone," and "Truth Hurts." The act of throwing a divorce party may not only serve as a ritual act to acknowledge the end of a chapter, says social psychologist Therese DiDano of Loyola University, Maryland. It could also reflect a way to embrace a new identity as a single person, separate from the ex. Need party favors? Walmart sells the end of an era balloons, and I do, I did, I'm done banners. Etsy offers a candle labeled, "Smells like freshly signed divorce papers." And Amazon features stickers printed with, "So long, Mr. Wrong." And temporary tattoos say, "I never liked him." Destination funerals. To honor her father's final request, Andrea from Tucson, Arizona, researched ways to scatter his ashes in Hawaii. She discovered that Hawaii ash scatterings offered private memorial voyages in the front of Sunset Cruises. As the small chartered boat drifted off Oahu, a Hawaiian kahu, or minister, began a soft chant while his assistant lifted a conch shell to his lips and blew a long, echoing blast. Family members cast biodegradable leis and flower petals that floated gently on the water, and the kahu released monarch butterflies. A sunset dinner on deck completed the evening. They took care of everything, From food and drinks to booking a ukulele player, Andrea recalled on TripAdvisor, cruise lines like Royal Caribbean now quietly offer sea burials with private ceremonies on deck, providing you bring the required paperwork, death certificate, and cremation certificate. The ship is at least 3 nautical miles from shore, per EPA regulations, and the ashes are contained in a biodegradable urn that is tossed into the sea. No literal scattering of ashes is allowed, as other cruise guests frown on Grandpa's ashes fluttering in their Mai Tais. Doreen de Villalbia honored her husband this way and found the process smoother than she expected. A ship's officer led her small group to a lower deck as she tossed the urn into the wake as sunlight shimmered on the water. 2 days later, she posted on Cruise Critic that she received a certificate marking the exact longitude and latitude of the burial at sea, a touching memento of a serene farewell. She is not alone. Nearly 6 in 10 Americans have attended a funeral in an unusual setting, according to the National Funeral Directors Association. Some choose to scatter a loved one's ashes in Yosemite National Park, permit required. Others march to the cemetery in a jazz funeral procession through the streets of New Orleans. Cultural anthropologist Anita Hennig, author of The Day I Die, says she sees destination farewells as part of a larger trend of families transforming traditional funeral rites into something much more personalized and individually curated to match the spirit of the departed. Which brings us to the stellar goodbye. Celestis Memorial Space Flights hosts launches of cremated remains at Vandenberg Space Force Base in California. When the company blasted the ashes of Star Trek's James Doohan, known as Scotty, into orbit, his widow, Wendy Doohan, described the experience as surprisingly joyful. You just know they are somewhere yelling, Yahoo! Destination Buddy Moon. A typical honeymoon turned awkward quickly when one newlywed discovered an unexpected surprise waiting in the resort lobby. Her husband's best friend and his wife. As she explained on Reddit, her husband had secretly invited them. The honeymoon quickly morphed into a group trip, shared excursions, group dinners, and zero intimacy. When the angry bride finally confronted her oblivious groom, he shrugged and suggested they could take a private trip another time. The buddy moon, turning a romantic once-in-a-lifetime getaway into a traveling circus, has become increasingly common. A survey conducted by Prezola, a UK-based wedding gift list service, showed that 14% of engaged couples consider the idea. Some newlyweds are shunning the once sacred honeymoon because so many couples now live and travel together before marriage. They see their shared honeymoon as a way to extend the wedding celebration into one long happy ever after party. Historically, the real purpose or goal of a honeymoon is for the couple to connect and spend quality time alone, says relationship expert Terry Orbuck, Ph.D., author of 5 Simple Steps to Take Your Marriage from Good to Great. The honeymoon is the time to bond and remind each other why they married in the first place. But today's couples, she says, are oriented toward making the celebratory fun last longer. After putting so much work, time, and money into the wedding, they want the celebration with everyone to keep on going. Of course, inviting friends or relatives to join a conjugal escape tends to escalate, for better or worse, to decidedly worse. Group honeymoons reportedly often backfire when friends party late, forcing the couple to choose their posse or each other, relatives wrest control, or the newlyweds pretend to have food poisoning just to get some time alone. Yet the appeal persists, and with privacy cut from the guest list, just married no longer means do not disturb. Destination birthday. gone wrong. On TikTok, a young woman named Lizzie shared a video of the moment she surprised her mother with airline tickets to Bucharest for her birthday, an idea sparked by hearing her mom say she wanted to go there. Lizzie expected tears of joy. Instead, her mother just looked confused. Turns out, her mom had actually said she wanted to book a rest, not a foreign vacation. But instead of a quiet weekend at home, she was suddenly packing for Romania. Destination birthday celebrations sound great in theory. You travel somewhere fabulous, toast another trip around the sun, and post pictures on social media to make all your other friends jealous. What could possibly go wrong, besides everything? According to People, one anonymous woman's 40th birthday plans backfired after she asked her friends to join her for a week-long Caribbean vacation, costing more than $5,000 per couple. When the group refused to take out second mortgages for the privilege, she gave them the silent treatment. So much for turning 40 gracefully. If you're invited to a celebration outside your budget, personal finance expert Aaron Lowry, author of Broke Millennial Talks Money, suggests go with the compliment sandwich. Start with a positive, state that you can't go, and include a reason why. Then end with an alternative. It could look like this. I absolutely want to celebrate you, but unfortunately taking a trip just isn't in my budget right now. So let's do happy hour or dinner when you get back, and you can tell me all about your trip. Of course, not everyone gets the memo. People reports that another woman suggested a trip to Asia for her 23rd birthday. But when her friends found that too expensive, they planned a cheaper getaway for the same weekend without her. Destination midlife crisis trip. Ah, middle age. A time of self-reflection prompted by the realization that too many birthdays can kill you. At age 45, retired Navy veteran Nick Cush didn't buy a shiny sports car, the standard midlife crisis splurge. Instead, he bought thermal gloves and Arctic boots. A few months later, he was skydiving over Union Glacier, 690 miles from the South Pole, with a team of fellow veterans on a mission to free fall over all seven continents in 7 days, and they wound up doing it in 6 days and 6 hours, a new world record. Antarctic Logistics and Expeditions organized the team's first leap. The outfitters also offer a week-long package that includes tent camping on the polar plateau, and for most thrill seekers, a heart-pounding $36,000 price tag. The minus 25 degrees wind chill put a deep freeze on any regrets about aging. Only a handful of people on Earth can say they've skydived over Antarctica, says Cush. My biggest fear isn't dying. It's being stuck in a recliner when I'm 85. Cush and his teammates' adventure raised money for Folds of Honor, a charity that provides scholarships for families of fallen or disabled service members. When you retire from the military, everything stops, says Cush. You've got to find a new mission. I realized I can still live a great story, and that's what I'm trying to do. Experiencing early signs of an aging body in middle age may awaken a desire to get started on one's bucket list, says psychologist Margie Lackman, a professor at Brandeis University. Indeed, the marketing firm Grandview Research reports that travelers in their 50s now make up to 26% of the adventure tourism market, and adventure companies are cashing in on the midlife itch, selling high-risk, high-budget escapes to travelers eager to prove they've still got what it takes, plus ibuprofen and a heating pad. An Australian outfit literally called Midlife Adventures runs long-distance motorcycle treks through Mongolia, India, and Nepal, pitching them as unforgettable experiences for 40 to 70-year-olds with the time, money, and desire to step beyond the norm. Destination tastings. Nowadays, foodies venture far beyond Napa Valley for wine tours, Kentucky for bourbon, and Portugal for olive oil tastings. Picklesburg is something you have to attend at least once in your life, says Lori of Hanover, Maryland, who visited the multi-day pickle festival in Pittsburgh with three friends. The event features everything from pickle ice cream to pickle beer, pickle-themed Christmas ornaments, a pickle-eating contest, and pickle bobbing. Lori and her group sampled pickled margaritas, fried pickles, and pickle fudge, a funky blend of tangy, salty, and perplexing. Attendees can also ride a bucking mechanical pickle under a gigantic pickle-shaped balloon. One YouTuber viewer called Picklesburg an experience I will always relish. What we eat and drink can bring us joy, says Cheryl Stanley, a senior lecturer at Cornell University's Peter and Stephanie Nolan School of Hotel Administration. And traveling so we can experience our knowledge about a place, food or beverage, or to meet a cheesemaker or sake producer, can take the joy to the next level by creating lasting memories. In Waikiki, Hawaii, the Spam Jam Festival celebrates the state's favorite canned meat with Spam Tacos, Spam Sushi, and Spam Wontons, drawing tens of thousands of devoted fans. If you're looking for creativity, this is it, commented Tiffany from Fairfax, Virginia on Yelp. I'm a food explorer, so I wanted to try all the unique Spam offerings. And I'll admit, I didn't really like most of them, she confesses, although she concedes that the Spam Wellington was pretty good. Some tastings veer toward outright daring. In Wiscasset, Maine, the annual Sustainable Supper with Edible Insects at the Maine Tasting Center begins with a cocktail hour featuring drinks like a Oaxacan margarita rimmed with crushed toasted agave worms. Rather than formal hors d'oeuvres, guests nibble on toasted grasshoppers and roasted crickets. A four-course dinner features dishes like mealworm dumplings and beetle chili crisp, and the event ends with party favors of insect-based sweets, including scorpion suckers. One guest, Sam Chatto of South Portland, Maine, says the ants speckling the cornbread looked like poppy seeds. Then came the real test. A taco with beetles and mealworms was visibly intimidating, he says. There was no mistake that you were eating bugs. So how were they? Great, says Chatto. They may have added a crunch, but in reality, that faded into the background. When all is said and done, it's not just a matter of taste, it's a matter of place and how far you're willing to go. The RD List. What to read, watch, and listen to. In film, Tuner, starring Leo Woodall and Dustin Hoffman. A pretty pitch-perfect thriller. Nikki White, played by Leo Woodall, is a soft-spoken former keyboard virtuoso who can no longer play because of his hypersensitivity to loud noises. Now he wears special earphones and works all over New York City as a loyal assistant to charming piano tuner Harry Horowitz, played by Dustin Hoffman. But after his mentor falls ill and runs up hefty medical bills, White reluctantly agrees to put his highly developed audio superpowers to use in a dangerous new business, cracking safes. Though White eventually wants out, I'm just a tuner, man. He tells the gang of crooks dependent on every twist of his wrist, his depression constantly gets the best of him. Not only does the tension build to a satisfying and surprisingly emotional crescendo, it's underscored by the jazziest musical composition you'll hear all year. Also in film, Remarkably Bright Creatures, starring Sally Field and Alfred Molina. Behold the warm yet unlikely bond between a cranky widow and a giant Pacific octopus. Tova Sullivan, played by Sally Field, spends her off hours cleaning at a local aquarium, where she keeps a special lookout for an aging mollusk named Marcellus. She's soon joined on the night shift by Cameron Casmore, played by Lewis Pullman, a loner, decades her junior, who is in search of his long-lost father. Little do the two realize that the wise and wary octopus is listening in all their conversations, and Marcellus colludes, via narration voiced by Alfred Molina, that they all need to break free of their respective confines to embark on new journeys. Based on the novel by Shelby Van Pelt, this heartfelt tale shows how establishing connection restores the soul. In books, Whistler by Ann Patchett. Who's your favorite person? If you're lucky, you see them often. It's been almost 45 years since Daphne Fuller's beloved stepfather, Eddie Trippett, uncharacteristically left without a word. Suddenly, there he is, in the same gallery as her at the Metropolitan Museum of Art. The unfolding of their new relationship as they get acquainted as adults and discover still kindred spirits is juxtaposed with flashbacks of 1980, when a snowy car wreck changed it all. Author Ann Patchett's love of books breathes through Daphne and Eddie, both aspiring novelists, as they rewrite the story of their fractured family. American Rambler by Isaac Fitzgerald. In this memoir meets local adventure tale, Isaac Fitzgerald follows the steps of folk hero Johnny Appleseed, real name John Chapman, who wandered the Ohio River Valley region at the turn of the 19th century, sowing seeds in a kind of frontier gospel. Along the way, Fitzgerald chances on an Amish racing buggy, a phantom dog, and a giant appleseed statue inside an Indiana H&M. But the story is deeper than just a lighthearted tribute. It's a raw but honest exploration of community, faith, and the patchwork of ideas and contradictions that make up modern America. Liar's Creek by Matt Goldman. Clay Hawkins left his rural Minnesota town to pursue a professional soccer career abroad, and to escape his strained relationship with his sheriff father, Judd Hawkins. Years later, Clay returns with his preteen son and new skills, thanks to a dangerous clandestine side gig that comes in handy when his beloved Uncle Teddy disappears. Clay must work with his now-retired father to find out what happened to Teddy, all while repairing his old family wounds. It's a twisty mystery set against the gorgeous woods and streams of Minnesota from an Emmy-winning TV writer-turned-novelist. Laughter, the Best Medicine, from Gary Katz. To bide their time on a long train trip, three priests agreed to share their darkest secrets. Once a month, says the first priest, I go on a bender and get blind drunk. I've gotten into gambling online, admits the second priest. Worst yet, I use Sunday collection plate donations to fund my bets. And you? The first priest says to the third, what's your chief vice?
Me,
says the third priest, I'm an inveterate gossip. From FactMedicine.com, when a wealthy businessman began to choke on a fishbone at a restaurant, a doctor seated nearby sprang up, performed the Heimlich maneuver, and saved his life. Thank you, said the businessman. Please, I insist on paying you. Just name the fee. Okay, said the doctor. How about half of what you'd have offered me when the bone was stuck in your throat? From Milton Jones. The worst job I ever had was a forensic pathologist for the United Nations. I remember uncovering the mass graves of 1,000 snowmen. Fortunately, it turned out to be just a field full of carrots. From Dan Cusato. I called the tinnitus helpline, but it just kept ringing. From Cray Zazzy on X. I am woman. Watch me fit 94 bottles of shampoo and 15 different body washes on my shower ledge. From Alice Murray. What happens when two silkworms got into a fight? It ended in a tie. Internet headlines from the 19th century. Women near you want to show their ankles? Clip here. Why your bourgeois boss hates Karl Marx, and you should too. Arsenic. The miracle chemical in future medicine. 10 signs your corset is slowly killing you. Number 7 is terrifying. This one simple trick cures milk leg, dropsy, and the vapors. From Gene Newman, a fisherman shouted out to a man waiting in the water, "Can I rent a boat on this lake?" "Yes," the waiter yelled back. "They're $10 or $25 an hour. Would you recommend the $10 boat?" "Absolutely not. I'm standing in one." From the podcast, How to Kill. My husband got stung on his forehead by a bee. He's in the ER now, his face swollen and bruised. He almost died. Luckily, I was close enough to hit the bee with my shovel. From David Mitteff. After visiting her husband in prison, a woman stopped by a correctional officer and laid into him. "You shouldn't make my husband work so hard," she said. "He's exhausted." The officer laughed. "Work? He doesn't do anything but eat, sleep, and sit in his cell." "That's strange," said the woman. "He told me he's been digging a tunnel for months." "You said a meowful." Cats have a knack for knocking things off counters. To honor that adorable, albeit messy, trait, here are knock-knock jokes from the Impossibly Good Book of Cat Jokes, edited by Thomas Nowak. Knock-knock. Who's there? Annie. Annie who? Is anybody going to feed me or what? Knock-knock. Who's there? Feline. Feline who? Feline fine after my fifth nap of the day. Knock-knock. Who's there? Pasture. Pasture who? Pasture leg and had to rub up against it. And knock-knock. Who's there? Tamara. Tamara who? Tamara, I want tuna for dinner. From RD.com, this is the most popular ice cream flavor in each state. Get the scoop on the winner where you live. By Mariah Thomas. Think vanilla and chocolate rule the ice cream world? This state-by-state breakdown tells a different story. Ice cream is one of those rare treats that never really goes out of season. In fact, Americans love it so much that the average person eats about 4 gallons every year. While a scoop hits differently on a sweltering summer day, there's no shame in digging into a bowl while wrapped in a blanket in the middle of winter. Before you decide what to order at your local ice cream parlor, read on to see if your state's favorite scoop matches your own. You might find yourself feeling validated or shocked by what your neighbor's been putting in their cones. How did this report determine the most popular ice cream in every state? This wasn't decided by a nationwide taste test, as fun as that sounds. Instead, Innerbody analyzed Google Trend Search data from all 50 states and Washington, D.C., looking at which ice cream flavors people were searching for most often. From there, researchers compared interest levels to identify each state's favorite flavor, along with broader trends in ice cream brands, regional preferences, and America's overall ice cream habits. Some states stuck with beloved classics, while others went all in on trendy picks, local favorites, and a few flavors you probably won't find in every grocery store freezer aisle. Here's the most popular ice cream flavor in every state. Alabama, birthday cake. Alaska, cookie dough. Arizona, Rocky Road. Arkansas, strawberry. California, strawberry. Colorado, chocolate chip. Connecticut, strawberry. Delaware, birthday cake. Florida, boba. Georgia, butter pecan. Hawaii, coconut. Idaho, vanilla. Illinois, chocolate. Indiana, peppermint. Iowa, birthday cake. Kansas, matcha. Kentucky, strawberry. Louisiana, birthday cake. Maine, blueberry. Maryland, strawberry. Massachusetts, cookie dough. Michigan, strawberry. Minnesota, strawberry. Mississippi, strawberry. Missouri, chocolate chip. Montana, cookie dough. Nebraska, strawberry. Nevada, strawberry. New Hampshire, cookie dough. New Jersey, chocolate chip. New Mexico, pistachio. New York, pistachio. North Carolina, birthday cake. North Dakota, caramel salted caramel. Ohio, strawberry. Oklahoma, Neapolitan. Oregon, lavender. Pennsylvania, chocolate chip. Rhode Island, strawberry. South Carolina, peach. South Dakota, cookies and cream. Tennessee, strawberry. Texas, strawberry. Utah, vanilla. Vermont, peanut butter. Virginia, strawberry. Washington, Neapolitan. West Virginia, pumpkin. Wisconsin, chocolate. And Wyoming, vanilla. Was there a clear winner across the country? Strawberry claimed the national crown, having been labeled as the top flavor in 15 states. Even more surprising, chocolate chip and cookie dough are the second most popular flavors, each holding the top spots in 4 states. Apparently, Americans still love the classics. Did you know that there are many ways to listen to audio journal broadcasts? You can listen to our live stream from your computer or tablet simply by going to our website at audiojournal.org. With a Wi-Fi connection, Audio Journal can also be accessed through your smart speaker. Simply say, "Alexa, play radio station Audio Journal on TuneIn," or "Hey Google, play radio station Audio Journal on TuneIn." You can also listen using a landline phone. For phone access, call Zeno Media at 1-712-770-1043. We also provide special receivers tuned to Audio Journal's frequency. Need one? Give us a call at 508-797-1117 or email info@audiojournal.org for more information. You can also listen through local cable TV stations. Check our list to find your town by going to audiojournal.org/ways-to-listen. Oh no! Did you miss your favorite program? Not a problem. Look for archives on our website or the Audio Journal iPhone app at audiojournal.org/podcast-archive. Audio Journal is located at 799 West Boylston Street in Worcester. You can reach us at 508-797-1117 or at info@audiojournal.org. Inspiration. Welcome to the inaugural Dad Games. From grocery bag dashes to diaper change races, competitive games at the first time event had 250 fathers showing off their skills and bonding over their experiences. By Sophia Solano, and this is from the Washington Post. Don Alley trained decades for this moment. It finally came, 21 years later in a Maryland parking lot. The event? One Trip Grocery Bag Challenge. The goal? Carry 15 shopping bags and a case of water inside from a trunk of an SUV in a single journey. His competition? Two representatives from other teams made up of dozens of fellow fathers. Allie, whose children range in age from 3 to 21, is the kind of dad who goes to all of his kids' sporting practices and who loves competition. The tedious act of transporting groceries from the car to the kitchen is a matter of personal pride. So when the rest of his team had finished shoving cereal boxes, cans of beans, and bottles of juice into the canvas totes and throwing them in the back of the car, he gathered all the items he could and took off toward the door. Because of a technical error, the team had to redo their attempts. Allie's teammates doubted whether he could replicate his first performance, which had ended in a sliding finish and a bloody knee. "I got 4 kids, and you think I got no energy?" he told them. "I got nothing but energy." This was the inaugural Dad Games, a competition series developed to celebrate the contributions of fathers and male role models in the home. Allie was one of 250 participants who came to the Upper Marlboro, Maryland Mormon Church last August to fight for the title of Dad of Dads, a designation attained by winning events like the Diaper Change Challenge and the Wiffle Ball Home Run Derby. They were supported by their partners and kids, who with tiny black and white striped shirts and stopwatches around their necks, refereed many of the events. The event also came with prizes, including a $250 DC Improv gift card for the winner of the Dad Joke Battle, and a signed Stephen Curry jersey for the winner of Trash Can Basketball. But organizers hoped the games would also signify an ongoing fight for community, recognition, and connection among fathers in an era of isolation and loneliness. Take the competition seriously, Dad Game founder Joshua Dubow said during his opening remarks. Yourself? Not so much. We don't need anyone yelling at a 7-year-old referee today. And with that, the games began. The idea to create an Olympic-style test of fatherhood came at the end of the NFL season. Dubose's group of friends looked away from the television at the barbershop in Washington, D.C., where they'd watched Sunday night games, and realized that no more football meant no more weekly hangouts. They started discussing ways to stay connected. Meanwhile, Dubose began noticing that his wife was part of more intentional parenting communities than he was. WhatsApp groups for moms at their kids' schools, and Instagram communities of parents sharing tips. Why didn't the fathers around him have a place to gather and talk about parenting? It was a bit of push from her being like, well, if that doesn't exist, create it, Dubose said. The idea for the Dad's Games emerged through the discussions with the Dubose's fraternity brothers and prayer groups. The venture is now a registered nonprofit in Maryland, but it wasn't Dubose's first spin in the fatherhood programming space. During President Barack Obama's administration, Dubose led the Office of Faith-Based and Neighborhood Partnerships at the White House, where he helped the president launch fatherhood initiatives like national educational tours, mentoring programs, and the nonprofit My Brother's Keeper. Dubose said he has found a passion for working in the men's mental health space. Men tend to self-select into loneliness, into isolation, and assume that no one wants to hear about their problems. He says they feel like they've got to navigate this thing called life alone. Dubose intends to take these games on the road. He and the organization's volunteers have already brought the Dad Games to Atlanta, and they hope to host it in Nashville, Los Angeles, and other cities across the U.S., as well as hold a national Dad Game Championship competition. To Dubose, it's all part of an effort to combat that isolation, with the help of homemade slime and lots of crumpled paper aimed at trash bins. When you get something wrong, you're wondering if you're the only person who got that wrong, he says of fathering. When you feel the joy of getting something right, you want somebody to celebrate that with. Or, you know, my kids just struck out 3 times in a row at T-ball, and it's hard to strike out at T-ball, so they're really bummed. Those are the kinds of conversations you want to have with other dads. After the conclusion of many raucous rounds of trash can basketball, a game involving crumpled paper, wastebaskets, and a ticking clock, the men moved on to the dad joke battle. They climbed the stairs to a stage, grabbed the mic with the swagger of any stand-up comic, and delivered a spitfire stream. What was the one-legged man doing at the ATM? Checking his balance. Did you hear about the restaurant they opened on the moon? The food was great, but it had no atmosphere. How does a man satisfy his wife in bed? With that line, Dubose leaped in with all the gusto of a dad catching a teetering cup, covered the microphone with one hand, and asked the competitor where this joke was going. This was, after all, a family-friendly event. They consulted. Finally, the audience got the punchline. By sleeping on the couch. Nana Fredua Aguman, a New Jersey father of two visiting family in the area, wasn't planning to join this competition, but his 12-year-old son begged him to. I do it for my kids, he said from the stage, before a one-liner about nacho cheese. I push them out of their comfort zone, and they push me out of mine. All of the participants' kids seemed to yell in unison when the diaper change challenge got underway. With a dozen dads, stacks of diapers, and piles of infant onesies, the objective was to be the first to change and dress a plastic baby doll. Amid the human kids' shouts, many of the dads cheered for one another. Sometimes you can lose yourself or not feel appreciated, says Terry Mundell, a father of two from Lanham, Maryland. But to him, this event felt like pouring in each other's cups right now and showing appreciation for one another. Meanwhile, at the Slime Chef battle, Dubose's 7-year-old daughter, Adelaide, stuck her finger into dozens of jars filled with thick, sparkly goop. "It's not sticky, but it's not perfect," she declared from the judges' table. "Not stretchy, but great creativity." "The kid is brutal," called one competitor. On the other side of the room, fathers competed in a daughter hairdo face-off, tasked with prepping mannequins' hair for a day at school. As the judges came around, one dad finished wrangling his doll's strands into twists and plucking loose tufts out of the brush he had used before they could see. Toward the end of the 5-hour event, organizers realized that the point system they devised to determine a champion didn't account for the competitors who had to leave midway for sports practices and birthday parties. No dad of dads was crowned that day, but the dads didn't seem to mind. Back on the battlefield, between rounds of the one-trip grocery challenge, men chatted, laughed, and discussed their kids' sports teams and hobbies. One took off his baseball cap and placed it on his waddling son's head, shielding his big round eyes from the sun. Another lifted his daughter high in his arms and spun in a wide circle. She giggled as the yellow tulle on her dress floated around her. "It's great to see fathers out here interacting, and then having our kids out here watching us do things together," says Rodney Anderson, Jr. A few minutes earlier, he had been showered with pats on the back and handshakes when he won the challenge, along with a prize of grocery store gift cards for his team. As Anderson spoke, his toddler hung off his calf. "All positivity, right? It's really about being that role model." Your true stories. Won't you be our neighbor? These folks do Mr. Rogers proud. By Reader's Digest readers. From Conda Quarry. I wondered who our neighbors would be when we bought land for our new house. I didn't have to wonder long. On a hot day, a beautiful and pregnant woman walked across the field with popsicles for us. Rochelle and I were both expecting our fourth daughters, and all our girls lined up within a year of one another. Our family spent the next 22 years making memories between our homes. They had to move out for a year about a decade ago while their house was rebuilt after a fire. They moved back on Christmas Eve, but the kitchen wasn't done, so I suggested they come over on Christmas for a big breakfast in our pajamas. Now every year we go back and forth. Who knew a few popsicles would have such an impact? From Paul Bailey. On Sunday afternoons, my neighbor Dick and I often mowed our lawns. Most people wouldn't give it a second thought, but we were both pastors who encouraged our parishioners to make Sunday a day of rest. On such occasions, we'd meet at the fence, confess our sin, assure each other of divine forgiveness, then finish the job. From Christine Cowan. My sister Lynn and I were close growing up, but our lives took a different direction after high school. Decades later, she was divorcing and needed a place to live. I'd been thinking of buying the home across the street as an investment, and the owner agreed to sell it to me at a discounted neighbor rate. My sister moved in the day I closed, happy to be in town with her grandkids. Now she and I are closer than ever. Exactly 100 feet door to door. From Lisa Lambert. When I moved into my new house, I noticed the woman next door working long hours in her garden. A few weeks later, Claudia knocked on my door, reluctantly informed me that our puppy had crawled through the fence and dug up every vegetable she'd planted. 4 times. I apologized profusely and built a better fence. I also helped replant every vegetable right alongside her and helped with weeding all summer. Not only did Claudia teach me about gardening and share the harvest, we also bonded during those sessions and have been inseparable since. She taught me to knit so I could make ski sweaters for my kids, and we organized my parents' 40th anniversary party together. I even wiggled through a doggy door when she locked herself out. I can't imagine a better friend or neighbor. From Katie DeLulo. When I was 4, my parents bought a farm. Not many would treat new neighbors with a bunch of rambunctious kids as family. The people who lived in the log cabin next door did. Wilma regaled us with tales of her days as an outdoors woman. Harmon took us for rides on his donkey cart and brought us treats for every birthday and holiday. When our parents went out, their instructions were, "Call Harmon if you need anything." In an account of his life, Harmon wrote, "When the Ratchkins bought the farm, we added a new family to ours." From Jane Gibson. When I was a kid, my neighbor worked for the Keebler Company. Their spare room was packed with more cookies than they could ever eat. His wife, aptly named the Cookie Lady, loved the neighborhood kids and often passed out cookies from their stash. My mom told me it was rude to knock on their door asking for some, but Mrs. Millie assured my mom that it made her happy when we came knocking. From Sandy Snyder. My neighbor Ann and I liked taking walks through the woods or to the bakery for a cookie. We enjoyed our girl time and didn't want our husbands crashing. When she was ready to head out, she'd signal by pulling down a bedroom window shade. Taking my cue, I'd call the house and tell her husband that I needed to borrow her for a bit. He felt good about helping a neighbor and never asked to tag along. From Christy Roberts. When my husband entered hospice, we set up his bed next to our wood-burning stove. That day, I heard my neighbor Jim chopping wood outside, and next thing I knew, he was bringing it inside by the armful. We had more than enough to keep my husband warm through his final days. During our decades as neighbors, we'd done plenty of good things for each other, but this memory still brings tears to my eyes. From Glenda Ferguson. 8-year-old McKinley's family moved into our mostly senior neighborhood 2 years ago. One morning, I found a handwritten note on my porch. It said I was beautiful, nice, cool, and awesome, and was signed, "Your Neighbor," in orange crayon. It was the first of many notes and drawings that always brightened my day. My favorite was a note in green ink, "Never forget you light up my heart." I left notes and gifts for her in return. McKinley's family has since moved away, and I sure miss that thoughtful kid who taught me how to be a good neighbor. And finally, from Mike Druger, we felt like fish out of water when we moved to a new town in Minnesota, but my mom finally made friends with our neighbor Betty. Our first Halloween there landed on a Sunday, which meant we had evening church services and had to skip trick-or-treating. Betty jumped into action. She called all our neighbors and told them the Druger kids would be going door-to-door for candy on Saturday night. So be prepared. That's when I knew we had a very special neighbor. Life well lived. Let's say yes. What started out as a way to get my son to try new foods opened up a world of adventure for my family. By Ann Fritz. Last year, as my then 9-year-old son Leopold and I were prepping for a mom and son ski trip to Keystone, Colorado, I came up with a rule. We would say yes to everything. You see, Leopold is a picky eater. He subsists on chicken nuggets and yogurt and can be hesitant to try new things. According to him, it's because he has phobias, including heights, spiders, and the dark, though I suspect he just has normal kid-sized jitters. I was hoping to find a way to encourage him without resorting to worn-out adages like, "If you don't try it, you won't ever know if you like it." So I borrowed the idea of a yes day, something our family has done a handful of times since watching the movie of the same name. Before the trip, Leopold and I agreed we would say yes to everything, including food and experiences, especially new ones. We started saying yes before we even boarded our flight, when we stopped at a breakfast buffet at the airport. For me, that meant I sampled a vegan meatball, while Leopold tried a mouse bite of hash browns he said looked funny. Neither of us went back for seconds, but we each rated our respective new foods as not bad. The next day, after we got settled at our hotel, I took Leopold to meet his snowboarding instructor. He had taken a few lessons back at home in Connecticut, but never had the opportunity to snowboard on a mountain of this size. My hope was that Leopold would make the most of this opportunity. While he was in snowboarding school, I skied by myself. On the first day, I played it safe and stuck to the long and winding easy green run. On the second day, I thought of Leopold, who the day before had kept our bargain and faced his fear of heights to learn how to ride a chairlift. In a spirit of camaraderie, I challenged myself to ski an intermediate blue run. There was a part that was steeper than I would have liked, but I did my slow, diligent S-turn, and I made it down in one piece. Better than one piece. I was proud of myself for trying something new. Later that afternoon, when Leopold and I were reunited back at the lodge, he asked if we could go in the outdoor hot tub. Mind you, it was a 20-degree day, and the only thing I hate more than being cold is being cold and wet. When I started to demur, Leopold invoked our pact. Yes, it was cold, and yes, I was wet, but it was also invigorating to feel the cold air on my skin, and the warm water of the hot tub felt that much better once we got in. Getting out was a different story, but the experience was a delight, as Leopold and I braved it together. We had so much fun saying yes to everything that Leopold and I decided we should get the rest of the family, his dad and sister, on board during our spring break trip to St. Augustine, Florida. We collectively said yes to a moonlit ghost tour of the city's allegedly haunted sites, including a centuries-old jail and gallows. While others in the group got claustrophobic and left the creepy jail cell during the telling of ghost stories, Leopold and I stayed until the bitter end. On that same trip, Leopold tried his first spicy tuna roll, and his sister Nola sampled blackened grouper. I went in the freezing ocean because Nola asked me to. I not only survived, I enjoyed it, as we had the whole ocean to ourselves. On our summer adventures, we continued the traditions of saying yes. For me, this meant going down a scary 90-degree water slide at a water park. Again, the only reason I did it was because my daughter asked me to. You know what? It was pretty fun. Though next time I would plug my nose. Leopold braved the ropes course and made it all the way up to the top. When we went to Yellowstone for our big family vacation, saying yes led us to take a 15-mile bike ride in Jackson Hole, go line dancing at a country and western bar, and ride horseback through a national forest. On the last night of our trip at the rodeo in Cody, Wyoming, neither my son nor my daughter hesitated when all the kids in attendance were invited onto the field to take part in the traditional calf chase. Though neither came back with the prize bandana, they were both laughing, sweaty, and excited. I know it's an experience they'll never forget. And therein lies the beauty of saying yes on vacation. It pushes you to bust out of your comfort zone. Though it's not always possible to say yes to everything back home, where work, school, and other obligations can get in the way, we're trying to say it more. Cultivating a sense of adventure helps you live life to its fullest, even if you sometimes wind up cold and wet. Art of Living. Facts and Fun. Happy campers. Adults all over the country are sending themselves to summer camp. These all-inclusive weekends feature rock climbing, zip lining, and water sliding. Activities designed to feed your inner child while nurturing new friendships. Many places, like Club Getaway in Connecticut, welcome kid campers during the week. Others cater solely to grown-ups, like Camp No Counselors, which operates in California, New York, and Texas. Programs can get pricey. Most fall between $750 and $1,000 per person. But given that about half of American adults crave community and connection, the consensus is that the camps are well worth it. At Camp Social, an all-female adult camp in Pennsylvania, organizers say that 99% of their participants arrive solo and 100% leave as friends. Quotable quotes from Manny Jacinto, actor. Go to couples therapy before you need it. From Fiji Simo, tech entrepreneur. Obstacles are just the world's way of asking, how much do you want this? The greatest limits you'll ever face are the ones you quietly agree to. From Fran Lebowitz, writer. People used to say, if I was a millionaire. Now they say, if I was a billionaire. I always say to these people, do you know how much a billion is? And they really don't. A couple of years ago, I heard the word trillion. No one should ever use that word unless they are an astronomer. And finally, from Lucy Dacus, musician. Sometimes you have to wear the costume before it becomes the clothes. World of Good. Reasons to smile. No lemonade here. When Ethan Wargo set up shop in his front yard in Sycamore, Illinois last summer, he offered refreshment in the form of free compliments because charging for them didn't feel right to the 9-year-old. Sitting beside his twin sister, Claire, who operated a separate stand selling her artwork, Ethan doled out dozens of kind comments like, your name is so unique, and I like your green running shoes. All his compliments were genuine. Ethan asked his customers to tell him about themselves so he could make a more meaningful remark. Chatting with people is my favorite thing to do, Ethan told the Washington Post. It makes people feel good. It also makes me feel good. From the Wall Street Journal, the term Midwest generally applies to 12 states, Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Kansas, Michigan, Minnesota, Missouri, Nebraska, North Dakota, Ohio, South Dakota, and Wisconsin. Yet a staggering percentage of people in Colorado, 42%, Oklahoma, 66%, and Wyoming, 54%, think they live in the Midwest. Nearly a third of Kentuckians say the same. Well, that does it for our program today. You've been listening to articles and stories from Reader's Digest. This program is a production of Audio Journal, a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network. If you would like a hard copy of our program schedule, either in large print or braille, please call 508-797-1117. Archived editions of this program are available on our website, audiojournal.org, or go to the Audio Journal app on your iPhone, iPad, or Android device. This is Holly Miller, and I'll be with you again soon. Thanks for listening.
This is Bird Note. When a northern saw-whet owl spreads its wings, many birds can see something our human eyes can't. The owl's flight feathers glow. It's invisible to humans without the help of an ultraviolet blacklight, which reveals a bright magenta color. Producing this otherworldly light is a trait called photoluminescence. While some bird feathers simply reflect UV light, photoluminescence involves special pigments or structures in the feathers that absorb UV and then release light of their own, often in a different color. Some cases of luminous feathers have an apparent purpose. For example, parakeets called butterygars have glowing feathers on their crowns and cheeks that may help them stand out to mates. Over 50 species of parrots, as well as some toucans, have similar gleaming ornaments. But for other birds, such as owls, we still don't have a good idea for the reason behind the glow. The luminous owl wings do have a specific use for biologists, though. scientists realized that they could estimate an owl's age based on the pattern of luminescent color on the wings, which changes predictably as birds grow and replace their feathers. It's a practical application of a beautiful mystery. For BirdNote, I'm Ariana Rimmel. BirdNote is grateful to the many contributions of Dr. Gordon Oriens and for his ongoing support of the show.
Welcome to Everyday Poems for Every Day, sponsored by Audio Journal. Our poem today is The End by A.A. Milne. When I was one, I had just begun. When I was two, I was nearly new. When I was three, I was hardly me. When I was four, I was not much more. When I was five, I was just alive. But now I am six. I'm as clever as clever. So I think I'll be six now, forever and ever. You've been listening to Everyday Poems for Every Day, sponsored by Audio Journal and read by me, Nikki Whichello. Thanks for listening. May your life be filled with poetic wonder.